Commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
Hey everyone, so before I start the second half of the interview with Celine Kiernan, I did just want to bring up something that I just discovered last night. If you've ever heard of the blog Publitariat, it's about self-publishing and various publishing things. The woman who runs it has come into some serious financial hell. The financial hell is not just financial, actually. It is probably the worst situation you could have at Christmas, I think, ever, next to dying. I guess recently in March, was diagnosed with breast cancer, and then 2 days after she was diagnosed, her husband said he was going to leave her, and then left her. And she has two kids, and it's now Christmas, and she's struggling just to make ends meet. I don't know if you guys have a couple bucks. I know it's Christmas. You guys have just spent all that money on presents. But if you've got a couple dollars, a dollar, anything that you can give to her to help her out, I mean, it would really be awful if her Christmas gift to her kids is foreclosure on their home. And this is ridiculous. It's just awful. So I'm going to try to donate a couple bucks, and I'm going to blog about it, and I'm obviously saying something here for you guys. If you can't donate any money, at least just spread the word. Just say something. And the least I think we could do around these parts is give somebody, you know, a little bit of hope. So if you could all do that, that would be great. Anyway, just give a sec here, and I'll put up the second half of the interview.
Awesome. So, and you are working right now on the Thomas Clark graphic novels. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Thomas Clark is something I wrote a long time ago. It was before the book I have coming out next year. It was before Moorhawk. It's really like one of those life works, because the artwork, even though the script's very long. It's like four volumes, actually. About 120 pages of artwork per volume. And I am never, ever going to get the chance to draw that. Never. Unless I win the lotto, you know. I'm never going to get the chance to put aside the time that I need to finish that. I mean, I think probably my only hope of it ever being published is if I get an artist on board. And I mean, the graphic novel industry is possibly, you know, the way I'm hard to publish, because you don't know what to do with me, you don't know what shelf to put me on. Now imagine that in time and investment to put into a graphic novel that you're not sure anyone's ever going to want to read. So I just can't imagine it happening, but it's my baby. It's my absolute baby.
That's awesome. So what book do you have coming out next year?
Oh, it's actually pure YA. It has very dark and again, very political. And it's again, but it's told through a supernatural medium. So it's a story about possession. But it's a lot to do with World War One and the fact that for a long time when I was a kid, right, even though I come from a family which had both military, revolutionary soldiers in it, you know, members of the old IRA, members of the Irish Army, men who fought in World War One and in World War Two in it. For a long time growing up as a child, I didn't even realize that Ireland was involved in World War One. There are real, those men and women are very much forgotten heroes in this country. And the the kind of conflict that that occurred then between the people who were fighting for our independence and the men and women who were considered to have fought for our enemy, if you know what I mean. Right. So that it's a lot to do with that story, but it's told very simply, or on the surface simply, as a YA story about possession, mostly possession.
Cool. So we can look forward to that next year then.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, it's been brought out here and in Australia so far.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, I guess the only thing I should mention before we close out is how I discovered you, just very briefly, because I don't want to go too deep into this, but it was actually a blog post you made about digital pirates who were torrenting the hell out of the Poison Throne. And then people gave you a lot of crap for suggesting that people should buy your book, which I thought was kind of ridiculous. they should buy your book, but apparently if you suggest that's you're evil or something. I don't, whatever.
Yeah, we should be grateful that people just want to read it, apparently.
Yeah, ha. Ha, I say.
We've had talks about piracy on the show in the past, and it's really kind of ridiculous, because there's two sides to this that are both incredibly wrong. There's the side that just says we should pirate everything, and then there's the side that says we should, like, cut off your leg if you pirate something.
I think it was probably you, or if it wasn't you, it was someone who posted very shortly after you. Yeah, the conversation rarely comes down to the individual. It's always a very big conversation. And that's why I phrased my request in the way I did. I mean, you one single person who is reading this, please don't pirate my work. I mean, that is the most basic request anyone can make. I don't give a crap about the overall implications of piracy or about who's right and who's wrong. I, as an individual, I'm asking the other individuals out there to please not pirate my work. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, that's probably really the only solution, too, to be honest, is making it personal, at least on a certain level. Because, I mean, like me personally, I'm willing to stick it to the man. and the man is behind, you know, a lot of authors, for sure. Not authors. I shouldn't even say authors. I should say musicians, recording artists who are much bigger and make a butt ton of money. But when it comes down to a personal level of individuals, more independent writers, smaller authors, and whatnot, then you know, if you're an intelligent human being, that there's a direct monetary damage.
Impact,
exactly, to those authors or writers or musicians, independent musicians and whatnot. And then it becomes, well, that just seems kind of stupid. I wouldn't want somebody to do that to me. Why would I do it to them? But it's one of those hugely complicated issues that really, when it comes right down to it, you have to make it personal. Otherwise, it's just going to keep happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not
DRAM,
just
DRAM obviously isn't the solution.
Oh, DRAM, no. And it is very interesting, because a lot of readers don't understand that if an author does not meet the advance, if they don't sell enough copies to pay off the advance and make a profit for the company that is publishing them, it's very likely they won't be picked up again. So if you pirate the book and you're like, this author's great, I'm pirated everything they have, and then you're like, well, why aren't they writing books anymore? Well, because they didn't get money. What did you
Nobody
think
Nobody paid them.
Yeah, like... No publisher in their right mind is going to publish somebody who's not making them profit. Like, mm-hmm. It's not how it works.
and regardless of the, there is an extreme tendency to be anti-publisher in these types of conversations.
Right.
And I've worked at this stage. I mean, Poison Throne only came out because a tiny little publisher in Ireland took a chance on me, right? And those guys, they survive by sales. They're not this big, faceless, huge corporate monster. They're like guys who love books, who take a chance on books that, like The Poison Throne, who other people are going, you know, people are writing to me, the author, and saying, you know what, I love this book. I can't tell you the amount of letters I've gotten, not just for Moorhawk, but for other books I've written, like, for example, the book that's coming out next year. I love this book. I don't know how to market it, okay? And then somebody, some publisher, you know that dirty word that people are always using, a publisher came along, and took a feckin' chance on me. Mm-hmm. They're the people that pirates are hurting too. Those little publishers who still love literature, who still are willing to read the book that they're going to publish beforehand, you know, and publish it because they love it. Those guys are dying. Those little small guys, they're dying. And I'm not joking. Fucking piracy is putting them under.
Yeah.
You know, so there's something to think about as well. Pirates are publishers aren't all these great big faceless corporations. And inside those great big faceless corporations, there's these little teams of people. My team in Orbit, they're like this little group of people who loved my book. They went to the Frankfurt Book Fair. They saw my book. They fell in love with it. And they bought it. And then they take it back into that big faceless corporation that everyone loves to diss. And they fight for it. And they fight for it every step of the way, right up until it's in the bookshop. Because they're busy getting you book space. They're busy getting you that tiny little bit of advertising that makes sure that your book is mentioned, you know, a fraction of the time that Twilight is. They're all working for Orbit. They're all the people that are in this big faceless corporation that everybody thinks is a big monster. There's these little teams, all individually working for individual authors because they believe in them. Yeah, so that's piracy as well, because those teams, if the books that they've taken the chance on don't work, that reflects on them too.
Yeah, their jobs get in jeopardy too. If they don't, you know, an editor can get fired if their books that they keep.
Yeah, and more and more, it's the guys who are taking the chances on the little weird books that get kicked out. It just kind of annoys me when you see the conversations online about publishers. In particular, it's about publishers, and it's as if there's no human beings involved at all, and that they've no passion. So.
Yeah, that bothers me a lot too, because it's not true. It may be true for certain aspects of certain publishers, but not for all of them. So why don't we'll kind of close up with a final comment about, because there's a lot, I don't want to talk about the piracy too much, except to say that they should buy your book. They should. That's what I did. I bought all three. So
I know, I was stunned.
I'm going to buy them for Christmas. So
are you? Really?
Yes, I am. I'm going to buy them for my girls because I'm like I said.
Really? They're so young.
They are young. They have read worse, I think, and they've watched worse. So I'm a very odd parent. Let's put it that way. And like I said, when I was 12, I think I was only like 11 or 12 when I read The Deed of Pax Narian. And there's a fairly graphic rape scene in that book. And, right. You know, the rest of the book is her reaction to it and everything. And so, and I don't feel like I was negatively affected. I could be really wrong about that, though.
You are
maybe
weird.
We don't know our own psychoses.
Exactly. So I suppose it's possible that
you
I'm totally screwing them up. But I think they can handle it. I talk to them a lot about politics. And the fact that the world isn't black and white, that there are gray areas. You know, it's like my older daughter plays Modern Warfare, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, and I have to explain to her, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I just want you to know that, yes, you're fighting terrorists, but keep in mind that those terrorists were created by something. They're not just faceless hordes. You cannot, you know, think of them that way. So,
it is gratifying that the next generation, this generation, aren't so much steeped in the pornography that we were. I mean, I can understand, and I still love, you know, those old war movies, Audie Murphy and all that. But I think it's lucky that our children, the wars that they have experienced remotely, haven't been sold to them as black versus white in the same way war was sold to us when we were young, because everything that we looked at was based on the whole World War II scenario, where there was a definite iconic bad lad, you know, that the whole world was, all the good guys were fighting against him. And it was rare that you would see something on the kind of less black and white level, as, for example, All Quiet on the Western Front. And even after Vietnam, we were sold it in a quite pornography way. Once the reality of it had worn off, the immediacy of it had worn off, we were still sold Vietnam film as being a bunch of good lads, you know, fighting a bunch of bad lads, really.
Yeah.
That's we were mostly sold it. But I think that our children, they look back, they've seen Sarajevo, they've seen, you know, all just list them, all the wars in which there was no person to mop up afterwards, you know. And so I think that we're lucky that our children have that foundation now, that understanding that there's maybe less good and evil and more a great big tangled mess.
Yeah, but well, I hope so anyway. I mean, that's specifically why
it needs to be reinforced.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, in the United States, we still have, you know, Al-Qaeda evil. We're the good guys. And that's still a large part of the narrative. And
well, it's the desire for the good guy to win in the end. No, exactly. It's more than that. It's the belief that the good guy will win in the end. You always want the hope that, you know, the good things will prevail. But I think it's very, very good to understand that just because you've won, you haven't automatically done the right thing, or if you know what I mean.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah,
exactly. And that's why I'm buying my kids these books, because, you know, it's the things, you know, it's the smaller, you know, especially when it's put into a fantasy world where it's somehow a little bit more distant, that they can read it as kids and go, okay, well, you know, yes, complicated themes, but still within a world that I can almost distance myself from. And then as they grow older, the books can become more immediate and closer to their sphere and therefore more relevant to them over time. I mean, yes, I'm starting them out early, but that's what I do around here.
All right. Well, we're going to close out the show. We'll put up links to Celine's website, and everybody should really go check out The Poison Throne. Buy her books, because piracy is not, don't do it. I don't even understand piracy for books. That doesn't make sense to me. Piracy for music, I get it, because it's instant gratification, but you still have to read the book when you pirate it.
Yeah, so you might as well just buy it.
And if you're so poor that you have to pirate it because you can't afford it, like, then how are you going to read it? You don't have, like, I don't know, whatever. Pirating books just doesn't make sense to me. I don't get it. So, anyway, so yeah, so do check out her work. And thank you so much, Celine, for being on the show with us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, we'll be right back with our reading and writing section. And we're back with our reading and writing section. So, first things first, I think I technically lied in the interview we just did.
You did?
Yeah, because I think I said I've never pirated a book, but I actually have.
You're a terrible human being.
But to be fair, I've never pirated any book that I would read for pleasure. I've only pirated books that I was just going to get from the library, but was too lazy to go to the library to get, or an essay. So it's very odd, because the U.S. doesn't have the royalty system. So
right. So technically, you didn't deprive the author of anything.
Well, and all the authors whose nonfiction, theoretical, philosophical texts I borrowed are dead.
Right.
So it's very odd. But I've never stolen a fiction book or anything that I've, you know, kept for my own uses. And actually, one of the books that I ended up pirating for an essay, I actually own now. So
It's weird. I don't know. Anyway, but so talking about books, what are you reading, Jen?
I am reading, well, I'm going to start reading Winter Duty by E.E. Knight. It's a part of the Vampire Earth series. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yes.
Came out a while back, but I'm just now finally getting to it. And I've really enjoyed the series so far. So I'm rather excited about reading this one.
Now I know somebody we should talk to about doing an interview.
We totally should, because I'm madly in love with these books.
Okay, well, I will do that. All right, anything else you're reading, or is that it?
I'm also still working on The Gunslinger by Stephen King.
Woo! Yeah. All right, well, I am reading, well, I'm still finishing Celine Kiernan's book, which I'm not quite done with. I'm reading the second Harry Potter book. I'm reading a very interesting book called Great Interdisciplinary Ideas, A Reader for Writers from Penguin Academics.
Oh.
It's not interesting. Don't, no, it's one of those books that, you know, you have to give your students, but I'm got a syllabus that I have due on the 12th. So I'm doing that, and I'm reading A Feast for Skeletons. I think that's the name of it. It's the new book that's released by Cross Genres. And I'm sure I'm reading something else, but I've forgotten what it is I'm reading. But I am reading something else. It's just, I just finished a Derrida paper. So, I've been writing. Yeah, it was my Derrida paper, which I finished, which would have been Wednesday night, since this is going up on Sunday. But yeah, so that's what that's it.
Like, so you're reading quite a lot. I don't really have time for reading because I've been knitting, and it's hard to knit and read at the same time.
Audiobooks, child.
I know, but that wouldn't really be reading. That would be listening.
It's close enough.
So I've been doing a lot of watching of sappy Christmas movies.
Oh, well, I'm going to be writing an essay on some of those Christmas movies and the issue of morality.
Yeah, there's definitely that issue in a lot of them. But yes, They're still sappy Christmas movies, and I'm kind of a sucker, so...
Yeah, well, I'm specifically talking about the claymation anyway. Stuff. All of the claymation ones.
Yeah. Oh, those are great though, and I own a collection of them.
Oh, okay. I gotta.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
terrible as they are for, you know, teaching morality to children, but I still own all of them.
Well, we're not teaching morality to children. Actually,
well,
we're teaching
immorality. Immorality. Or whatnot.
Yes. Yeah, but I'll get into that when I write my essay. But anywho, what is our question then of the week?
Our question of the week is, did you like the first season of The Walking Dead? Yes or no?
Yep. The final finale, whatever thingy came out. And as we know, the Walking Dead producer-y guy or whatever his name is fired all of his writers. So.
Oh, apparently that was actually a rumor.
A rumor? What?
Yeah.
No, I was so happy.
I know. I was slightly happy too, but... as you can see by what we're discussing right now, both of us, we like the show. We just don't like the show. But does that make any sense? Right? I mean, we like the fact that the show exists more than we like the writing of the show.
I like everything that was in episode one.
Yes.
I hate everything after that.
I didn't hate everything after that. I actually really liked some aspects of it, like the fact that one guy totally beat the crap out of the wife beater. That was awesome.
That was nice, but at the same time, like when the one blonde lady's sister died, I felt bad for the person that died. I didn't feel bad for anybody else. I was just kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for ruining that for me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding. I already know what happened, but I'm way behind. I've only watched the first 3 episodes, I think. So
yeah,
I'm 3 episodes back.
I stopped watching at 4. I'm going to watch the next 2 just to finish it out, but I'm not coming back next season.
I will be coming back next season because I still hold out hope.
I was hoping this would be the show that would make it worth me paying money to have cable.
Oh, right. And no. It did. So.
No, it just proved to me that it's just as bad as network television.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't cost me anything extra to watch it except, you know, an hour of my time every week, and I've got a lot of time, so...
I got Hulu. That's free.
Yeah, that's true.
So, anywho, so that's our question. We want to know what you think. We're going to put it as a poll, so you can just put yes or no on the poll. And, of course, we appreciate in-depth analyses.
Always.
Angry or happy, whatever they may be. And, of course, you should spread more rumors about writers being fired, because I would like that. Make me have hope. So yeah, so you can of course send more detailed answers if you would like via email,
mm-hmm.
which is what?
Oh right, skiffyandfanty@gmail.com.
Amateur.
I know.
You could leave a message on our bloggy place thing.
skiffyandfanty.wordpress.com.
Or you could try to send us a tweet at
twitter.com/skiffyandfanty.
So that's our show. We will have Torture Cinema.
Yes, it's going to be a Christmas episode of Torture Cinema.
Yes, yay! And it's going to be awesome because we are watching...
I don't remember the name of it. What's the name of it?
Isn't it Santa Claus Conquers the Martians?
Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, something like that. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. That's what we're
watching. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. I mean, seriously, the most epic combination ever.
Almost,
I mean,
except
from
for...
Cowboys versus Alien.
Except for the Santa Claus horror film, like the Norwegian Santa
Claus
horror film.
Oh, I know, that does
film.
Look amazing. That'll be next year.
Yes, we're going to list watch that. But anywho, so we'll save it. So we'll be back next week with Torture Cinema, and that's basically it.
Yay! Have a good one.
Bye!
Autobots, roll out!